The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
We got a little something for everybody on the podcast today. We are going to go out to Ireland. Another accent here. I think that's going to be our third accent, third long-distance call in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Alan Clark is the CEO of Homestay.com. What is Homestay.com? Well, you've heard of Airbnb, where you can rent a room or an apartment from some family or some individual in another country, or here even in the U.S., and bypass the hotel. Homestay.com is a little different. You actually stay in the home. They're living in your home. They're living in their home. You're renting a room from somebody. You're staying with a family, not unlike being an exchange student. It's not for everybody, but it is a great way to travel economically and meet some local people, and we'll talk to Alan Clark about Homestay.com on the podcast today. Also, Janine Tornatore is here. She's from Vivid Seats, and I asked her to be on the podcast today because the NFL season is right around the corner, and a lot of people like to take trips to see their favorite teams either play in another city or perhaps their favorite team is in another city, and a little bit about getting tickets, the cost of it as it's going up. I know here in Dallas, we see a lot of people. If you go to a Cowboy game, especially when the team wasn't doing so well. Last year they did pretty good at it. The team's not doing well. You could have it could seem like a Pittsburgh Steeler crowd in there or a Minnesota Viking crowd. There's so many people who travel down here. It's so easy to get to Dallas because they have a major airport, and it is just minutes from the stadium. So a lot of people do that. But we're going to start off the podcast today with Caitlin Pitzker. She is a writer for Kiplinger, and she had a great article about your rights as an airline passenger. And there's been a lot of stories recently about people getting bumped from flights. And this is in particular to that, your rights as a passenger. If you're getting bumped from a flight, what are you owed in terms of compensation financially and in terms of a ticket also? So, Caitlin, first of all, did you see there's last week there were a bunch of airlines that got fined for the way they treated passengers when it came to bumping them off flights?
I did. You know, there's been a lot going on recently. I think pretty much any day we could have this conversation and there'd be a news item within the last few days, whether it was yesterday's story or an incident in which a passenger was perhaps bumped from a flight or something unfortunate happened on a flight. Things are happening all the time, but all in all, most passengers are not experiencing these crazy situations, but it definitely pays to know going in what your rights are on a flight if you're bumped.
Yeah, because we've seen everything from a guy getting dragged off a plane, which was, made national headlines for a few days. Can we not agree that United Airlines could not have handled that more poorly in how they got the guy off the plane, number one, and then how they reacted the next day? That was ridiculous. That really hurt them. But then we keep hearing more and more stories about people getting bumped off planes, and you actually do have some rights as a passenger because you bought a ticket, and they have to treat you in a certain way and compensate you in a certain way, correct?
That's right, and I think the big incidents are getting a lot of publicity and definitely scaring some people. All in all, this doesn't happen particularly often, and the incident that you referenced with United in which the man was dragged from the plane is thankfully an outlier, but still pretty scary to think about. If you're someone who travels and you wonder, could that happen to me? What are my rights in that circumstance?
Okay, so let's talk about that first of all. But actually, before we even get to that, can we actually just touch on why this is happening, why airlines are asking people to leave flights? Why are they overbooking? What is behind all that?
Right. Well, so for an airline, having a paying customer in every seat is, of course, going to boost their bottom line. So airlines routinely sell more tickets for a flight than the number of seats that are available. Most of the time, this doesn't turn into a huge issue. People either change flights or are running late and they need to make a later flight as a result. And when they do have an overbooking situation in which too many people are there for the actual flight, most of the time when people are turned away, they're actually volunteering to give up their seats in exchange for incentives. So a lot of times it'll start with an airline saying, we're looking for volunteers, this flight is overbooked, and they'll be in search of a few people willing to take a later flight. And they'll offer, in some cases, some lucrative options of a couple $100 and a seat on a later flight. For people who are willing to give up their seat. And most of the time, that resolves the issue.
But sometimes it doesn't. So according to the Department of Transportation, there are rules that they are governed by that they have to follow. But sometimes I feel like they're not following them. Is that also happening?
Well, the rules that standards are outlined by the Department of Transportation, and I looked at them quite heavily while I was reporting on this story for the July issue of Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine. Those rules really deal with the compensation if you are involuntarily denied boarding on a flight that you have a confirmed seat. They're not necessarily governing every ounce of every bit of the process, every small behavior or large behavior, but they do outline the rules for compensation if you are involuntarily denied boarding.
Okay, and what are those rules? So everybody knows now. So if you are bumped, what are you supposed to what's supposed to happen?
Right. So what's going to happen initially, like we talked about a moment ago, airlines will look for volunteers first, and they'll start boosting that offer as it gets closer to boarding time. And it can be, I personally listen for those offers, because if I'm willing to be a little flexible, I might be able to snag a voucher for a future flight, which to me could be worth it.
Yes, yeah.
But if they don't get volunteers, they'll start looking at their lists, and every airline does this a little bit differently. But very typically, they'll look at a variety of factors, including what time you checked in for your flight, if you're a member of their frequent flyer program, how much you paid for your ticket. If you have a connecting flight, some airlines will try to avoid bumping you because it just kind of creates a bigger mess. And from there, they'll decide who to bump from the flight. Like it or not, at that point, they will come to you and say, you will not be on this flight. We'll get you on a later flight. This is what's called an involuntary bump.
Okay.
And that's what happened on the United flight that you referenced earlier. And three of the passengers did exit, no problems. And, there was a rather unfortunate incident in which one of the passengers refused and was taken out quite forcefully and sustained some injuries. Again, not typical, but it does happen, or it did happen, I should say. So in those situations, if you're involuntarily denied boarding on a flight on which you have confirmed, I apologize. If you're involuntarily denied boarding on a flight for which you have a confirmed reservation, the airline has the option of offering you an alternative that is scheduled to arrive to your destination within an hour of the original time. And in that situation, you're not going to get any sort of compensation besides we apologize for the inconvenience. Maybe some sincere apologies on that front, but that's about it. Once it goes beyond an hour, the Department of Transportation rules start to kick in. So if it goes beyond that hour, they kind of have the hour grace period to hopefully get you to your destination with minimal inconvenience for everyone involved. But if it goes into a longer time period, the airline is required to pay you twice the price of your original one-way fare, up to $675, if your arrival is delayed between 1 hour and 2 hours on domestic trips, or 1 and 4 hours on international trips. If your arrival is delayed even more than that, so that's more than 2 hours for a domestic flight or more than 4 hours for an international one, or if they just don't make alternative arrangements for you, they're going to owe you four times the price of your original one-way fare, and that's up to $1,350.
Wow.
So at least you'll be getting, you will be inconvenienced quite a bit in those scenarios.
Yeah.
But you will be getting some compensation, and you have the right to ask for that in a check rather than a voucher, which personally, if it was me, I'd rather have the money than
have
credit with the airline.
Yeah. So first of all, though, I want to go back and just touch on something because people may have missed an important point here. If you are involuntarily bumped, but they can get you on another flight which leaves within an hour, they don't have to give you anything except that ticket to get you back home.
That's right, or to your destination. If they're
yeah.
able to get you on another flight that gets you there within an hour of the originally scheduled time, they don't owe you anything per the Department of Transportation's rules.
Okay. All right. And by the way, I'm going to link this story. I'm going to link this story to our blog. And at the very end of the story, you have a link to the Department of Transportation, so the Consumer Guide to Air Travel, so they can kind of look all this stuff up and find out the same information that you found. So, and the interesting thing too, though, if you're on that flight and they're offering you a voucher to voluntarily leave, that may be the time to spring into action and take it, because at least you'll be guaranteed something extra. They might bump you off the flight and inconvenience you a little bit, but you may get nothing for it.
That's right. Well, that's mostly right, I should say. I always like to keep an ear open at the gate if they're starting to offer vouchers. Sometimes I've had situations in which they've offered a later flight that's about an hour and a half later, and $200 or $300 in a voucher. I'm happy to hang around the airport for an hour and then maybe take my next trip for practically nothing out of pocket. You have to weigh your own opinions and what your schedule is like on those. But it can be worthwhile, particularly if you're, you know, your travel plans are flexible and you fly at least a few times a year, to take that voluntary bump. Personally, I think it's easier too if you're traveling either alone or maybe with one other person, as opposed to, you know, a gaggle of kids with you or something like that.
Yes, yes, he's ready to get home. And the interesting thing too is after this story about United Airlines, a couple of airlines did Delta, I think, was the first to do that, said that they were going to bump up what they were going to offer all the way up to almost $10,000. I believe it was like just an extraordinary amount of money for $9,950. That's what it was for Delta. And I found that in your story too. The interesting thing though is I wonder how often even gets that high, because by the point in time it gets to $1,000, I can't imagine very many. There's got to be someone on the plane that's going to jump on that. But I thought that was a great public relations move by Delta, because everybody was talking about that. Wow, they'll offer you up to $10,000 to jump to voluntarily leave the plane.
That's right. So in response to, or I shouldn't say in response to, but following the United incident, actually both United and Delta raised their minimums. I don't think we're going to see those numbers getting that high. Particularly often people will be jumping at it. Usually, actually, most of these situations are resolved by volunteers. They're often only looking for a few people. People say, hey, I can hang out in the airport for an hour or two, or even overnight, because in that situation, many of the airlines will offer you a room. And, you know, people will snap that up, but it does give gate agents a little bit more flexibility to sweeten the deal if they're having trouble getting volunteers, and hopefully avoid situations in which people are bumped involuntarily.
You know, I got bumped involuntarily one time on an airline that no longer exists. We were getting on the plane, and it was we were in Los Angeles. We had to transfer in Phoenix. That was their major hub. That might be a clue to people out there who know the airline industry. And then go to Dallas. And as we're getting on the plane, they said, is anybody going to Dallas? And like, I raised my hand. They said, can you come with us? And we like got off the plane. They said, you aren't going to make your connection, so we're going to give your tickets to somebody else. And then they gave us a room to stay in overnight. Next day at the airport, we're supposed to fly in, but we are on standby. And we kept like getting bumped from flight to flight to flight, and we got missed like three flights in a row. Finally, it was like the next to last flight that day, back to Phoenix, which we still needed to catch our connection flight. And they were reading off names off the list on who was going to get on the plane, and there were like five of us. And finally, we were like banded together and said, "Hey, we've been waiting here for a day over 24 hours trying to get on a flight here. We need to be at the front of this list." And the guy said, "What are you talking about?" We said, "Look at your manifest. We've been bumped from flight to flight to flight." The guy looked at it, and this look of horror came over his face. So I swear to God, this happened. He took the microphone with the long cord, stretched it around the corner, walked into a closet because he was so scared of how angry people were getting, and then he would announce names who got to get on the flight, and then he stuck his arm out with the boarding pass. That literally happened.
That is quite a story, and quite an experience too. I'm sorry you had to go through that.
That airline no longer exists, but I actually should, I don't know if the rules were that was over 10 years ago, if the rules were in place then, but I actually should have been compensated also for having to stay overnight, and shouldn't I have?
You know, I don't know what the rules were 10 years ago, but if that were the circumstance today, you certainly would be entitled to compensation under the Department of Transportation's rules.
Well, I really appreciate your time. It's a great article, and everybody should read it if you fly and you want to know what happens if you get bumped or they start taking people off the plane. It's in Kiplinger, and we'll put a link to it on our travelwithhawkeye.net blog. And Caitlin Pitzker, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for the research on this great article.
Well, thank you for having me.
By the way, if I can stress again, our blog at travelwithhawkeye.net, that's our website, travelwithhawkeye.net. You can find links to all our past podcasts. You can also subscribe to iTunes, our podcast via iTunes there. And also, right on the front page is a big blue circle that says blog. Click on that and you go to our blog. And that has a different posting for every episode we do with Travel with Hawkeye. So if you hear an article or perhaps a destination or a website or a book that we mentioned on the podcast, you can find links to that. Very easy to find, so you don't have to sit there and try to jot something down or remember, what was that place called? I was trying to wonder about that. Just go to travelwithhawkeye.net, click on blog, and all the information is there. And you can also hear all our past podcasts on travelwithhawkeye.net. All right. A lot of people like to travel and use Airbnb, which is a great way to save money and live in a neighborhood. You're actually living in an apartment usually or a room. that is owned by an individual, but there's something that goes just one step further. It's kind of like being an exchange student for the year 2017. It's called homestay.com. It's a website. Alan Clark from Ireland, calling us from Ireland. He's the CEO of homestay.com. And first of all, tell us what homestay.com is exactly.
Homestay.com is an accommodation marketplace focused on host-present inventory. So we're all about connecting people together with places, connecting people from various locations to the local neighborhood by having hosted stays between guests and hosts.
Okay, so I who live in Dallas, let's say I wanted to stay in London. I would go to your website, type in London, when I wanted to be there, and then what would happen then at that point?
You're presented with a selection of hosts. You know, what we try and do is, you know, help hosts identify themselves based on their interests, based on their, you know, the type of host they like to be, the types of things they like to do with their guests. You select the host, you contact the host, they reply back to you, you know, pretty much within 24 hours, and, you know, hopefully you make a booking and you have a great stay.
Now, when you make a booking with this person, a couple of questions. First of all, you are paying the host also. They're renting out their home and their time, so you are giving them some type of compensation for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's an accommodation platform. I think some of our hosts like to show people around. Some of our hosts are just quite happy to, you know, just to, you know, be less involved in the person's stay. It is a paid transaction. Your homestay takes a 15% deposit or booking fee, and the rest is paid to the host by the guest.
I see. Okay. And I guess the big question that I have for a lot of travelers is safety. I mean, you know, how do you know that the person you're staying with, like in London, is, you know, safe?
So there's a couple of things. We have ID verification checks on the platform. We also have a video calling product, which allows guests and hosts to contact each other through a video call ahead of even making a booking, long before arrival. And then obviously there's a very strong review-based platform. So, you know, many of our hosts have had bookings in the past. Many of our hosts have had fantastic 4- and 5-star reviews. And, you know, they're a great basis for guests, prospective guests, to you know, select the right type of host for them.
So this is a little bit different than like an Airbnb where you would just be renting a room. Here you're actually staying with people. That's kind of the idea here?
Absolutely. So the homestay category of travel comes from probably the education travel background where, you know, many of your listeners may have hosted students in the past.
Yes, yes.
Or many of your listeners may have been students themselves who traveled to to foreign countries or even within the United States and had a different experience, you know, staying with a local family. And, you know, that's what the homestay category of travel has always been based on. What we have really done is put that online, make it more accessible and, you know, for both hosts and guests, because what we find is our hosts really enjoy, you know, meeting new people from different parts of the world and as much as our guests do.
Okay, a couple more questions. Is there kind of an age limit that you're, not age limit, but kind of a demographic that you're going for? Like you said, this is kind of based on the exchange student program. So is this more for, you know, people who are in the college age, or is this open for everybody?
It's open for everybody. And the really amazing thing about the platform is it really appeals to lots of people from a demographic perspective. And you can cut that word in many different ways. So from an age profile perspective, you know, there are people booking all the way from 18 to 65 and above. From a reason for travel perspective, you know, we have education travel customers. We have people traveling for leisure reasons, people traveling for business reasons. You know, it's really about tapping into an appetite to, you know, connect with a local area, to try something different and to make travel more personable.
I'm looking at the website, and this sounds like such a fun idea, because one thing that I really like to do is kind of, I'd like to live like a local, and that's really what seems to be the main goal of homestay.com.
Absolutely. I mean, we think about it, as you can see from the website, you know, experience more with those who call it home. And, you know, our hosts are very excited about giving tips and tricks and advice on where to stay, what to do, and yeah, how to get under the skin of a neighborhood. And we see that in the reviews that our guests leave of our hosts and vice versa, where the, you know, the guests are positively effusive about the experience that they've had.
Now, is this open also to couples? Like, if I wanted to travel with my wife, are there hosts that accept couples?
Absolutely. So, you know, each of the hosts will have outlined their, you know, their preference, but, you know, the majority of our bookings still tend to be from solo travelers, but there are many, you know, couples and families who use the platform to travel around.
Okay, now let me flip the coin. Can I become a host and host people from foreign countries in my home?
Absolutely. You know, it's a very easy sign-up process. Go to homestay.com/host, and it's a, you know, five-stage process to create your profile. You know, it's important to take and use good pictures of yourself and of your home. You know, the more you tell about yourself, the more interested, you know, people will be in staying with you, because it's about connecting the right type of person with the right type of host.
All right. Well, Alan, I really appreciate your time this morning. This is kind of opens up a whole new world for a lot of people, kind of a new avenue for traveling. It's a little bit different than just renting a room from somebody. It's, you know, a chance to actually meet somebody. And I think that's one of the greatest things about travel, is to meet someone who lives there and kind of find out about their world and their life. And a lot of times when we travel, we don't get to do that too often. We only really get to meet other tourists in the hotel. And that's what I'm really excited about homestay.com, and I hope my listeners are too. And I really appreciate your time this morning and the call from Ireland.
Many thanks. Take care.
Alan Clark, the CEO of homestay.com. And once again, I will have a link to their site on our travelwithhawkeye.net blog. So just go to travelwithhawkeye.net right there on the front page. Click on blog and get all the information. All right. NFL season is about a month away. And a lot of people like to visit other cities to see their favorite teams play, either A, because they're playing in another city, or B, their favorite team is from another city. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about that today, because that's an important part of travel if you're a sports fan. We have Janine Tornatore from Vivid Seats with us. And Janine, here in Dallas, actually, a lot of people will fly in just for the game. They'll fly to DFW Airport. They'll take an Uber or cab down from the airport to Cowboy Stadium, AT&T Stadium, and then after the game, they go right back to the airport and fly home, because it's so convenient, because the airport's so huge and the stadium's right near the airport. Does that happen in other cities?
That's a great question. I really don't know how common that is. I think it's probably very doable in some of these other cities, especially places like Chicago and Seattle. But, you know, I think most people probably try to make a weekend of it, unless they just want to get there, and maybe the ticket prices are so expensive they just want to see the game and get back out.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see making a weekend. I mean, why not? If you're going to go up to Seattle to see your favorite team play the Seahawks, and it's all downtown, it's a very convenient type of weekend. You could do that pretty easily. And most NFL cities, if the stadiums are in the downtown area, it's easy enough to do. Well, we kind of want to talk a bit about, if you want to do that, ticket prices, where's the best place to go? Where is not such a good place to go, because it might be kind of expensive? And first of all, for the 2017 season, ticket prices across the board are probably going to be higher than last year. Would I be correct in assuming that?
You would be. In fact, Vivid Seats looked at how much average ticket prices are up on their site in terms of what people have actually already bought. And they're up 6% compared to the 2016 season. So nothing incredible, although you will see that varies greatly when you start looking at specific teams, how much ticket prices have gone up or down.
Okay, when you say the specific teams where the prices go up, are there teams that are in a major metropolitan area like New York or LA, or are there teams that had success on the field last year?
Well, I think when we look at the big ones, it's really based on success. Probably not surprisingly, the most expensive team to see this year at their home stadium will be the New England Patriots. They're demanding an average of $380 on average per ticket, which is a 31% increase compared to last year. The Atlanta Falcons also right up there with average ticket prices of $259, 135% increase over last year. Not only did they make it to the Super Bowl, but they have a brand new stadium, which a lot of people are really eager to check out.
You know, that's kind of interesting about the Falcons, because I read the owner was keeping concession prices down in this new stadium so families could afford it. But apparently it's just the concessions that are affordable, not the tickets. And $300 average ticket for the Patriots, do you kind of have a price range? Like, what's the cheapest I could get into a Patriot game on average?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you look at the average prices that people are paying, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have to pay that much to see them. So, you know, there are ticket prices from $60, $70 to some of these games at the Patriots home stadium. So it can be a lot more affordable. A lot of it depends on what game do you want to go see. Some of these matchups are a lot bigger than others, you know, in terms of how much you're willing to pay.
Okay, and VividSeats.com, if I was to go to that website, this is the secondary market. So people, can they set their own price? Is that what's going on also here?
That's exactly right. So when we look at the average ticket price that people have paid, you know, there might be people willing to pay $1,000 a ticket to get that amazing, you know, box seat. And then the other end of the spectrum are the people that are paying $40 a ticket for the nosebleed section. So the average is a little interesting to look at, but not necessarily indicative of what you as a fan can get in for.
You know, it's interesting. If you go back 20 years ago, before the internet got big, the secondary market meant some guy standing on a corner and you not really knowing until you got to the game what the marketplace was for tickets. And now, I mean, you simply go online and find out really, you know, the supply and demand of tickets before a game, and you make that determination. Hey, you know what? Should I buy now? Should I wait until closer to the game? You know, it's very interesting. It's kind of like it's really kind of shifted toward the buyer.
It absolutely has. I mean, buyers really have the advantage here in being able to, you know, have that transparent look at what tickets are going for and, you know, where those seats are in the stadium and what, you know, even what your viewpoint is from that. There's so many interactive features that you can see, you know, where you're going to sit for that $40 ticket and what your view is going to be. And then also even being able to buy the tickets from, you know, our app and get the e-ticket, not have to have a paper ticket, walk up and get it scanned when you walk in. So there's a lot of kind of not just convenience, but, we verify that our tickets are valid, and I think that's really, really important for a lot of people that are getting those last-minute tickets these days.
Okay, I want to stress that last point there, okay? That, you verify these are going to be valid tickets. You back that up at your site.
We do. We have what we call our Vivid Seats Guarantee, where we guarantee that our tickets are completely valid tickets.
The reason I bring that up, I was in Baltimore to see an Orioles game, and the guys behind me had bought tickets off someone on the street, and basically there was something that they printed up off their printer or whoever they bought them from, and they were unsure until they walked in the gate if what they had was valid or not. And I bet that happens all the time.
Well, counterfeit tickets have gotten a lot more sophisticated these days, and with the paper printout tickets that simply have the barcode, I think it's a lot harder for people to tell what's valid and what's not.
Oh, definitely.
So it is a big concern for people just purchasing outside the stadium. And again, I think that's one of the advantages people have to using, you know, sites like Vivid Seats is not only can you get them in advance, but just having that credibility makes a big difference too.
Okay. I want to ask a couple of other questions before I let you go, because I'm a big NFL fan. And this year, there's a second team in Los Angeles. The Chargers are moving there. And oddly enough, until their new stadium is ready, they're playing in a very small stadium that was meant for soccer. And there's not a lot of tickets available. I'm wondering, is there a lot of interest in Chargers tickets? It's not a very good team. They're playing in a substandard facility. They've already got a second team. This is the second team coming to Los Angeles. I wondered how they're doing ticket sales-wise.
Yeah, well, when we looked at how teams are ranking in terms of number of tickets sold, they're number 18 out of 32 right now. So not bad. They're in the middle of the pack. Their tickets are averaging $200, which is up 100% compared to last year. So it's interesting to see that price increase. And like you said, it's a smaller venue, so I don't know if people are a little more anxious to get in to get their seats to see him. But, you know, that's a big jump compared to last year, especially considering their new stadium isn't finished.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So it sounds like it is somewhat working out for them because the demand is there in the new city, Los Angeles. And then the last thing, is there any matchups this season that you're looking ahead and, like, you can already tell it's going to be a very expensive ticket if you want to go see these two particular teams play?
Well, we looked at what right now are the top 10 selling matchups on Vivid Seats. Number one is New York Giants versus Dallas Cowboys. This is coming in an average ticket price of $242. Also at the top of the list is the Packers versus the Cowboys, $308 for an average ticket, and Kansas City versus the Cowboys at $232.
There seems to be some type of reoccurring theme.
You see a trend. And then number four is the Cowboys at the Cardinals, $280. So, yeah.
Wow.
Texas fans are really, you know, they're supportive. And, of course, Dallas is our number one selling team right now on Vivid Seats. So I guess it really is America's team.
Well, or you know
that
what?
Just, it pains me to say that.
Would you like to state your affiliation, what team that you root for?
Well, I'm a Chicago girl, so I'm a Bears fan. I also grew up in Kansas City, so I kind of claim a dual Bears
okay.
and Chiefs.
Dual citizenship.
There, playing, right.
There you go. All right. Well, Janine, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And I know a lot of NFL fans appreciate the inside information because a lot of people like to travel during the fall and make NFL part of their travel plan. So really appreciate the time.
My pleasure.
That wraps up this episode of the podcast, Travel with Hawkeye. Don't forget to visit our website, travelwithhawkeye.net. And click on blog for links to everything we talked about on this episode. For everybody who was part of this, our entire staff, I want to thank you for listening to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. The world is out there. Remember, your adventure awaits.